The Courage to Lead, episode 38.
You're listening to the IB4E Coaching Podcast.
Brought to you by IB4E Coaching, business coaching for executives, entrepreneurs, and small business professionals. Learn more at ib4e-coaching.com.
Hey, Coach Harlan here. Welcome back to the podcast. Hope you guys are having a great day and a great week. I'm having fun because I actually found this guy on YouTube and I really enjoyed his YouTube channel. And so I decided I wanted to connect and bring him on to the podcast as a guest. So let me introduce you to my new friend, Bharat Kanodia. Bharat is a founder and chief appraiser at Veristrat Inc. and a member of the American Society of Appraisers. He has valued over 2,000 businesses, real estate, industrial and financial assets, including governmental infrastructure, public and private companies, and various unique real estate assets. He has valued companies like Uber, Airbnb, DoorDash, GE, and Tesla. Bharat has valued unique assets like the Golden Gate Bridge, Atlanta Airport, Mirage Casino in Las Vegas, and many others. He signed off on over 4,500 valuations with $2.6 trillion in assets globally. Bharat lives in the San Francisco Bay Area with his family and enjoys sailing, golfing, skiing, and horseback riding. And he's also the host of a great YouTube channel called What's It Worth, where he helps educate people who are counting on selling their business for sustained retirement to understand the latest industry trends, rules of thumb for valuation, and how to increase the business's value. Bharat, welcome to the show.
Coach Harlan, thank you for having me. And I got to say, I'm already impressed. You perfectly pronounce my name, and it is very clear you've done your homework. I much appreciate that.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, like I said, we connected, and I went out and found your YouTube channel, and I binge watched. I must have watched all of those because I have clients. One client is a sign. He owns a sign company, and you had a video on there about valuation of sign company. Another guy is in the trades industry, builders. So how do you, you know? And I was just fascinated. I think it's a great, great channel. Definitely want to talk more about that, how you got into it, how you were selected to evaluate the San Francisco Bay, the Golden Gate Bridge, Mirage Hotel in Vegas, the Atlanta Airport here in Atlanta. Definitely want to talk about all that. But before we get started, and listeners, you know what's coming up. These are the icebreaker questions that I ask every one of my guests before we start the podcast. These are the questions made famous by James Lipton on his award-winning show, Inside the Actor's Studio. These are the 10 questions that James asked his guests. And if these questions are good enough for the Hollywood elite, they're good enough for my guests. So, Bharat, if you're ready, I have 10 questions for you. Question number one, what is your favorite word?
God.
What is
I don't say that to be, funny or anything. Sometimes just God, you know.
Sure. No, good word. Number two, what is your least favorite word?
My wife saying what?
Yes.
I'm like, oh my God, oh, what did I do?
And it depends on the tone of that.
Oh, it's yes. Very much on the tone.
Yes, like what or what? Yeah. Okay. We digress. Number three, what turns you on?
People being real.
What turns you off?
Posers. When people, it's easy to read somebody's body language and know if somebody's real or not. And when somebody's pretending to be somebody else, you don't know what it is, but you can tell that something is off here.
Yeah, absolutely. What sound or noise do you love?
My daughter coming in every morning and saying, good morning, daddy.
Nice. And what sound or noise do you hate?
My son whining.
Number seven, what is your favorite curse word?
It's actually in Hindi, and it rhymes with like sister bugger.
Okay. Okay.
So translation of that, what you will.
Got it. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Well, that's a good one. I have not really seen that show, but I think after speaking with you, I will go back and listen to some of those shows. I think these are very insightful questions. Let's see. Architect.
Okay.
I'm trying to be like George Costanza. You know, my name is Arpad Lin. I'm an architect. No, but I think if I had not gotten into where I am, I probably would have been an out-of-work architect.
Okay. Question number 9, what profession would you not like to do?
Politics. You know, because in politics, you almost have to do one thing and see the other or do the other and think the other. And that's just too much work.
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly. All right. And finally, if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Well, well, well. Look what the cat dragged in.
That's right. Surprise. All right. Good job. All right. So we're going to get into this. We're going to talk a little bit about your background, how you went from being a mechanical engineer and then getting your master's in international finance into evaluating some of the biggest businesses that I think we've ever heard of. So, Rod, stick with us. We'll be right back right after this brief message. So hang in there.
Imagine having a trusted group of CEOs at your disposal. Imagine having your very own peer advisory team who could work you through the problems and questions in your business before you had to make those difficult decisions. Imagine you had a group of advisors that had your back and met for the sole purpose of making you successful in your business. What would you be able to accomplish then? Well, you don't have to imagine anymore. You can have that and more when you join my Business Success Mastermind Group. Join my Business Success Mastermind Group today. Learn more at ib4e-coaching.com/mastermind.
All right. And we are back with my guest, Bharat Kanodia. Thank you so much again for agreeing to be on the podcast. I think this is going to be a great, great conversation. Like I said, I love your YouTube channel. I think it's phenomenal. Very, very well done. Very professional. How did you go from mechanical engineering into evaluating businesses?
You know, I was never into engineering, first of all. Okay. It was something that, you know, I just have to, you know, it's kind of like it's a pill I had to swallow.
Okay.
But I'm really glad I did, because it allowed me to do a lot of things and it opened up a lot of gates for me. Graduating from college, I wanted nothing to do with engineering and I wanted a job in finance, but who's going to give a kid who's 21 years old, with a mechanical engineering degree, a job in finance? Yeah. I found one guy and he became my boss and that's all I needed. Nice. he was fantastic. He was most kind to me. And he gave me some of my best opportunities. From there, I started to value hard or tangible assets like machinery and equipment. Mm-hmm. Then they liked my work. I started to do real estate assets like commercial buildings and casinos and hotels and malls. They liked my work. Then they asked me to do business assets like financial assets like companies. They liked my work. And now I'm really on the dark side. I'm making, you know, stuff up every day, which is in the venture capital and the private equity side. Now I'm really making shit up.
Wow. Wow. So, you know, valuating a piece of machinery, that's one thing. When you start getting into businesses, there's so many things that feed into that value or could take value away. How long did it take you to get that process down to where you really knew how to evaluate these businesses?
Great question. So as I've shown you the progression, right, going from machinery and equipment to commercial real estate, to businesses, to venture capital, the unknowns are going exponential. Mm-hmm. And as the unknowns of those assets go exponential, your assumptions that are baked into your valuation also have to go exponential because there are too many unknowns, so you got to make a lot of assumptions. And you get better at making assumptions after you have done some basic assets and understand them. You've done a more, you know, advanced assets and understand them. So it's just a regular path of progression. Now, most people in my world, they don't get to witness this path because they stop somewhere around here. As I've said, I've been fortunate, or maybe sometimes unfortunate, that I've gotten a chance to keep progressing on that path. And now I'm really on the dark side.
That's great, though. Yeah, because some people just, they know this, they can evaluate this, they're pretty good at it, right? Their estimates come in pretty good. They want to stay there. They've hit their level of success. That's enough for me. But it seems like you just keep going and going. Veristrat, when did you start Veristrat?
2010, April 1st.
Very nice.
I had a nice cushy gig, a nice cushy job at Silicon Valley Bank. And one fine day, I said, the hell with this. Okay. And one fine day, I quit. Took the dog, took the wife, and I started the business. And nice. Everybody, that was in the middle of the recession in 2010, right? Everybody in my family thought I was fired.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, I wasn't fired. Seriously, I'll show you my notice letter that I wrote to my boss. I wasn't fired. And they're like, yeah, okay, yeah, uh-huh. But no, that was a great time and a great time to start a business. I mean, you know, my grandfather always said the best time to set up a factory is when there's blood on the streets.
Interesting, yeah. Well, because, you know, there's that turning point. Things are going to come back. After the recession, things are going to happen. After this pandemic we're coming out of now, the travel industry is going to take off, right? A lot of that is going to happen. So, yeah. Getting prepared for it. So when you first went out, how did you find your clients?
I reached out to the people you know, and just let them know that, hey, this is what I'm doing. And it was an uphill battle in the beginning, of course, you know, but sure. Then you get one, and then you get the second one, and then you get the fourth one, then you get the eighth one. And it really is just a flywheel, okay. Right? I mean, you might miss one or two, but you can't keep missing, because if you keep people happy, they will tell other people.
Sure.
And if you make people unhappy, they will tell everybody.
Yes.
So just That's be careful and keep doing good work. And this is what I keep telling people about valuations. Valuations are no different. Valuations are just an amalgamation of people's belief into a system or an asset or a vision. And my job is to quantify that belief into numbers.
See, to me, that's the magic, because a building, fine. There's enough information about buildings that are for sale or have sold to estimate what a building is worth. All the equipment in the building, all the office furniture and everything. But it's those intangibles. How do you find those intangibles? And how do you know you've captured all the intangibles?
Yeah, I don't. When you're washing your bed linens or washing your clothes, right? You think you've gotten most of it or all of it, but there's always something left. And, yeah. You know, you hope that you've gotten or captured majority or the maximum you can out of it. It's like, you know, squeezing juice out of a lemon, right? You can try hard, but you can never get 100% out.
Right.
You can get to 99 or 99.9%. So that's it. There's always something that you might have missed. But my job is not to worry about what I've missed. My job is to worry about all I can gather with all the information that is at my disposal.
Nice. And I guess that's where those assumptions come in. This is based on the following assumptions. As long as those assumptions are something that the other party agrees to or buys into, then it's valid, right? If they say, well, you missed this, fine, that could change the whole value. So at this point, you probably have customers coming to you rather than you having to go out knocking on doors, right? Tell us about some of these: Uber, Airbnb, DoorDash, GE, and Tesla.
These are fun projects, right? And many of these projects are once in a lifetime type of projects. The example I give people is, you know, I love steak, but you don't eat steak every day. Some of these projects I was very fortunate to be a part of. You're in Atlanta. I have appraised all the assets owned by the city of Atlanta.
Wow.
So I spent a lot of time at City Hall for a while. I've been fortunate to do a lot of these assets, and they've been fun. And that is why I feel very comfortable in doing oddball or unique or interesting assets, because I have done them. These are the assets that most appraisers wouldn't know how to do or wouldn't know where to start and wouldn't dare touch with a 10-foot pole. But I enjoy doing them because it's different kind of thinking, you know. Yeah. Doing an apartment complex, it's stupid. That's easy. That's not rocket science.
Right.
You know, but trying to value the Golden Gate Bridge, like, okay, where do I even begin?
And that was for insurance purposes, right?
That was. And that was the first bridge I had ever appraised in my life.
Wow.
I had never appraised a bridge ever. But that's the training that I have that, okay, it doesn't matter that you've never done it before. But the training that I have, and this is where the mechanical engineering degree really helped me. Mm-hmm. I learned how to learn. I know the basics of valuation, right? Mm-hmm. I understand how to see the world from my lens. But how to put it together, that's what engineering and experience taught you.
Yeah. Awesome. So how did you go about the Golden Gate Bridge? Just seems, too big. How did you go about it? I mean, is it down to all the materials, the labor that went into it, the land that it spans?
Valuation is not rocket science, Harlan. People make it complicated, and people make it sound more complicated, people like me, mm-hmm. because we call it job security. Unless I make myself sound important, why would you hire me? I don't subscribe to that. I go the other way. My thought process is, look, I got to make you understand what I do. Only then you will appreciate what I do. As Einstein said, if you cannot explain it simply enough, you don't know it well enough.
Absolutely.
So there are three simple ways of valuing anything, and it doesn't matter what it is. It could be a book, it could be a trademark, it could be a brand or bridge or an airport or a business, right? Three ways. And if somebody tells you otherwise, bullshit. One, income, right? So you're looking at the cash flow that business or that asset gives you for the next umpteen years, and you present value that.
Okay. Simple,
right? Mm-hmm. Second, you look at similar assets, right? So say I've got $2 here, right? So is this dollar the same as this dollar? Yes. Okay. Is this dollar different than this dollar? Yeah. Okay. So find a dollar that is similar to this dollar. Kind of like how they appraise the houses, right?
Okay.
They say a house like yours is selling for so-and-so in the market.
Right.
That's number two. And number three is, okay, if I'm valuing this cell phone, what will it cost me to rebuild or recreate this cell phone from scratch? That's the value. Three ways of valuing anything. It's really not rocket science.
Wow. And something as large as the Atlanta airport.
Same principles.
Wow.
It's kind of like, you know, how they say life is a fractal, as above, so below. So it doesn't matter the size of the object, right? So, you know, in Men in Black, one of my, you've seen the movie Men
in
Black. One of my favorite lines is, when will you humans understand that size of something doesn't matter, right? Yeah. So be an Atlanta airport or be a small salon or a beauty shop, it doesn't matter. They all have the same principles.
The principles are the same. Go through them. Yeah. Very nice. And that's what I liked about your YouTube channel is you are able to explain that in a way that people can wrap their heads around it. You know, somebody who owns a business, like I told you, I have a client that has a sign shop, understanding how you would go about valuating that business if he was looking to sell, and then what he could do to increase the value of that business. That is excellent. What gave you the idea to start the podcast or the YouTube channel?
The best things in life happen to you when you least expect them or by accident, right? So I had spent a lot of money in marketing my business. And I had hired SEO expert, website expert, PR expert, conference sponsorship, marketing. I mean, you name it, I threw the kitchen sink at it. It's my business, right?
Yeah.
And the results were marginal. Marginal at best. So I had to do something. And after making all these mistakes, what I really learned was everything is BS. What really works is content. Content is king.
Yes.
And if you try to game the system now, if you try to game the search engines or Facebook or Instagram, if you try to game any of these engines, you might win in the short term for a day or two or maybe a week, but eventually they'll figure it out and they will punish you for it.
Sure. Once you think you have the algorithm figured out, they change the algorithm.
They change the algorithm. So don't try to game the system.
No.
So be honest, do good work. And the best way to play the game, if you will, is to create content.
Nice.
And video, original video content is king of kings. So I said, okay, everything aside, I'm just going to double down on original video content. And I did it the way I like to do it. I like to do it very simply. I watch YouTube all the time. I am still trying to understand why the heck I paid so much money for my MBA. I did not need to. I could have just learned everything that they taught me just watching YouTube for
sure.
4 hours a day. So I created content, and I created content not for geeks like me, but for business owners who can really use help in educating themselves in valuations. Valuations have become such a household term now, Harlan, that everybody needs to know what it is.
Yeah.
So I took it upon myself to educate people.
Well, and I think business owners, they need to know their numbers. They need to know where they stand at any given point in time. They need to understand not only what their business is worth, but how to help improve that value, right? I've heard stories. In fact, my business coach talks about he was working with one guy who wanted to retire, figured his kids would take over his business for him. The kid said, "We want nothing to do with your business, Dad. We see what it's done to you." He knew he had to sell. He needed to get about $1 million out of his business. They worked together for 18 months and he was able to get an offer on the table for $5 million for his business. He had no idea what to do until he worked with somebody to find out how to improve the valuation of his business. When you work, or and is that something you offer in your business? Do you help businesses understand how to increase the value?
Very much. I mean, valuation is a scorecard.
Okay.
So, you know, when you're going through school or when you're going through college, at the end of every semester, you get a scorecard.
Mm-hmm.
How did you do in each subject? How did you in physical training? How did you do in art? How did you do in handwriting, right? All kinds of, some have grades and some have good, bad, and the ugly.
Right.
And when you have a PTA, parent-teacher meeting, parents and teachers sit down and talk about, okay, this is where Harlan is, and this is where Harlan could be, and this is how to get there. And that's the conversation I can have. So I can tell you that, hey, this is your scorecard today, but this is not your future. This is what we have today, or it was in the past, but it doesn't have to be your future. And these are the steps you can take to improve it.
Yeah. So what is the biggest mistake you think people make as far as their businesses? Not keeping up on the value of their business, or what are they doing that is taking away from the value of their business?
They are making themselves indispensable. When people start thinking and saying that I am the business, mm-hmm. it's not a business, it's a job.
Yes.
And that happens because many times people are going from the corporate world to the business world. And when people transition from the corporate world to the business world, in the corporate world, you're almost taught that, you know, you want to sort of keep your armor out and guard your territory. And that's right. Just, you know, different games. It's like going from Monopoly to checkers or Monopoly to chess, right? Yeah. They're different games, different rules, man. Yep. So when you're going from a corporate job to running a business, well, your mindset's got to be different, because here your job is not to do everything. Your job is to make other people do things or create processes so that things happen. Yes. And that transition is difficult for people. And it was difficult for me. I'm no saint. I made all these mistakes.
Sure.
So I think if people understood that nobody's going to pay you big money to buy a job, right. That's when they'll realize, like, you know, the reason that person received $5 million in offer, because he or she probably created the right systems and processes in place so that the guy can walk away with $5 million and the buyer would be totally okay with it.
Sure. Yeah. If everything you know about the business is in your head, hopefully your head is walking out the door with you, right? You're not leaving that for the new owner. You have to have that documented, written down somewhere. I was told years ago as a consultant that if you can't be replaced, you cannot be promoted. And same thing in business. My goal is to try to help my clients build a business that runs for them without them having to be there. They have their systems in place. They have good leadership in place so that they can step back, go do something else, you know, the little fruity drink on the beach somewhere, right? And let the business run. That's my goal. So making this transition, you said you went into mechanical engineering, but that's not really why you wanted to get there. How did you, if that wasn't something you wanted to do, how did you start mechanical engineering in the first place?
I was pushed into it by my father. My father was a non-technical person and he was running an aluminum plant. And he thought that somebody should have a technical degree to understand the basics of the world. And I now totally understand where he was coming from. But when you're 17 years old, you disagree with everything your father says.
Right.
And I was just like any other good son. I did not listen to my father at all. So, but that was one thing I did, because those were his conditions to go to college. So I said, fine. I went to college and I did mechanical engineering, and today I'm so glad I did.
I'm sure it helps absolutely in your business. So where did you, you know, the podcast is about courage, right? The courage to lead, what it takes to be a courageous leader. Where did you find the courage to say, I've got all this money in this engineering degree, but I want to go this direction? Where did you find that courage?
You know, just like I've gotten the courage to do anything, right? I mean, when I had appraised the Golden Gate Bridge, nobody in my company had ever done something like that. When I had appraised the Atlanta Airport, nobody in my company, which was a 100-year-old company, had never appraised an airport. When I wanted to teach people about option pricing models, nobody had ever broken it down the way I had broken it down. Or, you know, even my YouTube channel. If you look on YouTube, I mean, there are many videos on valuations, but those are just geek talking geek talk.
Yes.
Nobody's breaking it down like me, because I feel like, look, I if my work is not helping people, what am I doing here?
Well, so, the thing I love about your videos is they're so well done. They look professional. You know, like I said, they look like those special reports you see on one of the news programs. You're out in the field. You're walking through a factory, you're walking through a shop, talking about things. Very, very professional. Is that your work, or is that somebody, did you hire a company to help with
that? Oh, God, no, it's not my work. So what I do is I write the original content.
Okay.
And the reason I write the original content is because camera is merciless. If you are a little in the authentic, the camera will blow up this much. It's kind of like, you know, how they say camera adds 20 pounds.
Yeah.
Same thing works, you know, in authenticity too. So I write original content, and then I have a script writer.
Okay.
She helps me clean up the content, but the original words are mine.
Okay.
Then I have a producer, I have a director, I have a team. And frankly, Harlan, in my mind, I'm not doing this show for YouTube, in my mind, I'm doing this for Netflix or Amazon. So any listeners from Netflix or Amazon, give me a call.
I think it would be great to pick that up. Like I said, it reminded me of the how things are made, right? That's the feeling I get from it. Exactly.
Yeah.
I think that would be phenomenal. So you've worked with a lot of great big companies. Are there any companies you would like to work for? Anybody you want to reach out to?
Oh, you know, one I should have said this. A fabulous job would be to work for like a hotel company or like United Airlines. I did one job for Continental Airlines, which took me to Guam of all places. Mm. And that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, working for like a hotel company like Ritz-Carlton or Aman or St. Regis, one of those, it would be great.
Travel the world, value every one of their properties.
Go around places, appraise their hotels. Yeah, hell yeah, I'll do that. Maybe I'll do it.
The cruise industry, right?
The cruise industry would be great. I sail. I love sailing. So I would do that. Yeah. Maybe appraise the America's Cup.
Wouldn't that be
awesome?
That is awesome. Maybe one of our listeners can hook you up with that. I think that would be fun. So if you were to look back on your career, would you have changed things? Would you do things differently now? If you could go back with what you know now, what path would you take? Would you still go through mechanical engineering? Would you do something else? Would you go straight into finance?
No, I think I would probably do the same. You know, there was this old joke, right? Everybody was asked to put all their destiny into a bag and put it into a big well, and then asked to pick out, you know, each other's bags, and nobody wanted to do it because everybody wanted their own bag back. Yeah. I think it would be the same for me. You know, yeah, I maybe could have done more, or maybe I could have done less. But you know, life has treated me okay. I have a lot to be thankful for.
Absolutely. Good stuff. And so how you're releasing a YouTube video every day, every week?
Oh,
what's
God,
your schedule?
God, no. It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of coordination. We spend a lot of time pre-production. We rehearse dialogues. We think about scenes. Shots. We think about locations. We've been putting out one every 2 weeks.
Okay.
But you know, it's a long play for us.
Yeah.
You know, the results, we're starting to see results, and people have been appreciating them. So it's encouraging.
Absolutely. No, it's good. It's very good stuff. So how many people do you have at Veristrat?
We have eight.
Eight people. Very cool. And so what type of leader are you? If I was to run into one of these people on the street and ask them about you, what kind of leader would they say you are?
Inspirational.
Excellent.
I may not know all the answers, and I don't know all the answers, but I can inspire people to find the answers because I know I have inspired myself or pushed myself to find the answers myself. Nobody's born with all the answers, but you got to figure it out.
That's awesome.
You know, you're not hired to know everything, but you are hired to find out what you need to know.
Right. And that's where the college education comes in. That's learning to learn, right? Yeah. Exactly. And that's part of the intellectual courage that we talk about is knowing that the knowledge you have is probably not the latest and greatest knowledge. There's probably better knowledge out there. And for business owners to be able to set their knowledge aside, the one thing that drives me crazy is where people say, oh, this is the way we've always done it, right? Set that aside, ask your employees, what can we do differently? How can we do this? You know, that's really where the magic happens is when you can open it up to them. So as this inspirational leader, what's next for you? What's next? I mean, you have your office out there on the West Coast. Are you looking to expand? Are you looking to open offices around the country?
Nowadays, no, you don't need to have multiple offices around the country. You know, the world is different. I can have multiple people working for me in different parts of the world. That would be cool. Yeah. I would be, I have been fortunate again or unfortunate to have appraised different assets in different parts of the world. I think that would be cool. I enjoy traveling, especially, you know, when you are traveling by yourself for work, I feel like I'm on honeymoon with myself. So it's kind of fun. But YouTube channel is a kick. It's fun. I get to create, and what's more pure than creating something, right? I think that's pure. It's like cooking, right? What's more Absolutely. Pure than that? So I'm enjoying it. And hopefully the right people appreciate and seek my talent, and we'll see where it takes you.
Excellent. Yeah, like I said, I'm in love with the YouTube channel. I've told my wife about it. My brother-in-law, who's a genius in his own right and stuff, told him to go out and check him out. I think it would be great. So where can people find you if they want to connect? What's your website?
My website is verystrat.com, or you can go to my YouTube channel, and there's a link to my website there. Okay. Or there's a email address that you can reach out to me. And if you have questions about valuation, happy to help. You don't have to hire me to do a valuation. As I said, I cannot create a need for somebody to hire me. Right. You already have a need, and I can help you or answer your questions. If you have a question, reach out. Happy to help.
Excellent. And to find your YouTube channel, they can just type in "What's It Worth," right?
What's It Worth, Bharat, on YouTube, and it'll pop up.
Perfect. Great, great stuff. Well, Bharat, this has been phenomenal. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. This has been great for me. I hope people reach out. I hope they go out and look at your YouTube channel. I definitely think it's worth the time. Great videos out there. So again, thank you. And listeners, hope you enjoyed this. If you did, make sure you share this with your family, friends, and colleagues. Go out and check out the YouTube channel. What's It Worth? It'll be well worth your time. And that's it for me, Coach Harlan, saying so long for now.
Thank you, Coach Harlan.